Welcome to today's episode of Journey to There, exploring the intersection between personal and business growth. And now your hosts, Tracy DeForge and Russ Reba.
Tracy, my spell check is mad at me today because I won't correct your clever show title that you sent me. We have an exceptional guest on today's show. Along with Tracy DeForge, I'm Russ Reba. This is Journey to There, the radio show. It's where we get to hang out with you at the intersection between personal and business growth. The website, journeytothere.com, where you can listen to the show, download past episodes, leave some comments, and we're also heard via iTunes, iHeartRadio, Empower Radio, as well as many other platforms. Tracy, wait a minute. So here's the spell check issue. You sent me a show title, wait a minute, but it's W-E-I-G-H-T.
Yep, and it was not a typo.
Yeah, we have a doctor on the show today. Her name is Katrina Ubell. She gave up her pediatric practice to become a certified life and weight loss coach. This is an interesting journey. Tracy, you're glowing with anticipation to get this show started, so let's do it.
I know. I've been so excited all week about the fact that we get to talk about this, and here is why. Because I have had my moments in my life where I have weighed more than I'd like to and actually weighed less than I like to, and a lot of it has had to do not with my nutrition or not with my physical contribution in terms of exercise or lack thereof. It's been all around emotional turmoil and some stressful times in my life. And so I am so excited to actually have not only just a girlfriend that talks about this, but a doctor who talks about this as well and really honors the fact that weight loss is not always just about the calorie intake and the output. It can really also be associated with your beliefs around your weight and around weight loss and just around healthy wellness in general. So, Katrina, let's talk about it.
Sounds great. I'm so excited. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, I'm bringing up this whole idea of beliefs and associations around weight loss. And I was saying how excited I was to talk about it because I know it's impacted my life for, you know, the better part of since I was old enough to know what a scale was. So, can you tell us a little bit about really, I would love to know because we're all about the intersection between personal and business growth. So as a busy physician yourself, can you talk to us about your aha moment when you decided, hey, like I know this and I really feel like the world needs to know this?
Absolutely. I think that's a great question. So for me, I started using food as a way to basically feel better early on. I mean, probably once I went off to college, you know, I'd be really tired studying. I went to a pretty competitive undergraduate university and had to work really hard. We had a lot of fun too, but we worked really hard and then got into medical school and worked really hard there, started taking call at night. And so, you know, when you are working so hard, you don't really have an option. You have to be there. You have to be doing the work. There's not a lot you can do to make yourself feel better, but you know what makes yourself feel better? A Dove bar. Seriously. Like that is what I would...
Or when you get residency. Dumped, it feels better to eat a bunch of ice cream.
Exactly. So like, you know, so for me, this dump bar habit began in residency. I would be on call as an intern. And in those days when I was an intern, we actually did not have the work hour restrictions that are in place now. So we would work more than 30 hours in a row and taking call. And, wow. You know, you might have had time to eat dinner. But I mean, at this point, it's probably been 8-9 hours since you've eaten. You are legitimately a little bit hungry. But rather than sleeping, you have to go and do an admission or something like that. And you just feel so sorry for yourself. There's so much self-pity. And so we were able to use our little meal tickets that the residency program would give us to go down and get some food. Well, this like quote unquote coffee shop that they would have that really was, it's, you know, a compliment to call it a coffee shop. It sounds really nice, right? It sounds like, oh, it was like Starbucks. No, it was actually just really, this, you know, it was like candy, popcorn, and some really crummy coffee. And so I would go down there and get a Dove bar. And seriously, in that moment, it did make me feel better because the sugar and the fat would give me a little dopamine release in my brain. That's the feel-good hormone in our brains. And
oh,
so it would
yeah.
really make me feel better, you know, right? The sugar would give me a little bit of quick energy so I could keep moving. But the downside to that was gaining weight, not feeling good about myself, knowing that wasn't the right choice. And so that takes away from that initial pleasure that you get, especially when it becomes a habit, because our brains then go, hey, that was amazing. Remember when you did that Dove bar? That was really, really awesome. You should do that again every time we get into this situation, which was pretty much every third or fourth night. And wow. So you can see how I gained a considerable amount of weight that intern year. So this is how it all kind of progresses. Then you are in such a pattern of like, if I'm uncomfortable, if I'm really tired, which happens, even when you go out into practice, you still take call. I have three children. So, you know, there's just exhaustion is a big part of that. But also just feeling maybe frustrated, maybe feeling really just kind of upset about certain things. The pattern that my brain basically took on as how to deal with that, how to cope, was to eat. And so I did a lot of it at night. I'd eat really great throughout the day, and then nighttime would hit. Kids were in bed. That's like kind of the finish line as a parent, right? Like, kids are in bed.
Guilty,
you have your
couple
hours to yourself, right? And then that's when I'm like, you know, I'm totally like prowling in the pantry. Like, what do we have? What can I eat? And I would buy things thinking, oh, the kids would like these. And then I would end up eating them, right? So I would wonder why I was such like a yo-yo dieter, like why I couldn't figure this out. And this is something that I think in the medical community is a big issue, is that we feel like we should know how to fix this. Like, we have a scientific background. We should, you know, we give advice to our patients on how to lose weight, and yet we have problems ourselves. So I was in practice as a pediatrician for about 10 years. And the last year and a half or so of it was when I started thinking, you know, there's got to be something going on here. I had finally lost the baby weight for my third child and thought, okay, that's it. I'm going to keep it off, except I wasn't keeping it off. So I started thinking, wow. You know, something else is going on. Like, what is the deal here? And so I actually hired a nutritionist online, was working with her a little bit, and she was monitoring what I was eating and trying to get me off some sugar and things like that. But she suggested that I look into a book by Janine Roth about emotional eating. And up until this point, I had seriously never, ever identified myself as an emotional eater. In my mind, I thought of someone who was like sobbing while stuffing their faces or like something like that. And I'm like, no, I'm pretty like even keel emotionally. But what's so funny, right, is the reason I wasn't sobbing was because I was eating. The reason I wasn't feeling all those intense emotions was because I was using food to dull that. And so in the coaching world, one of the words we use to describe that is buffering or neutralizing that negative emotion. Like, you feel better when you eat this, so then you aren't the one sobbing in the corner, so that you can hold it together and move through your day. So I had this big light bulb moment.
Actually.
Yeah, isn't it huge? Yeah, like, I am an emotional eater. Oh my goodness. So then I started looking into other options, like other ways to deal with that. And I knew I really didn't need to see a therapist as such. I just kind of, I don't have anything against therapists. I think they're fantastic. I just didn't think that that was probably going to be the avenue that would be helpful. And so instead, I found a life coach who specializes in weight loss for her clients. And so I learned through her all of her tools of how to cope with life without using food. And in the process, I lost 50 pounds.
Wow.
And so I weigh less than I did in ninth grade, for real. Like, and I was an athlete. I was not overweight.
I mean, okay, so Rockstar, you have three kids. Wait, now we gotta pause for a moment on this. You just said that you weigh less than you did when you were an athlete, as I understand, ninth grade. You've had three children. You've been a busy physician and a mom.
Yeah.
And you have, I won't say you won the battle, because I think battles like this are always sort of ebb and flow. But I mean, 50 pounds, I mean, that's a great success story, and I would imagine your clients really love that about you.
Oh, my gosh. I have a client right now who has a considerable amount of weight to lose, but she's lost 90 pounds doing this. And it was all because she has a very stressful job. She has four children, and she needed to learn the tools that I teach, which are how to deal with life without using food.
You know,
and so, once I learned all of this, I was like, I have got to seriously get the word out. Like, that's where the job switch came, where I was just like, this is just – nobody's teaching this stuff, especially to doctors. I need to really switch and do something different.
See, this is something I wanted to touch on, because right now, sitting here, I see a huge similarity between you, Tracy, and you, Katrina, because in your lives, you were experienced with some very negative energy, let's say, and you changed your careers, both of you. You changed your careers, and now you have helped yourself, and you're helping other people. And I'm looking at this with both of you. What I want to know is, you, what was it, like 10 years you had this pediatric practice?
Yeah, I was... it's interesting now. I can look back in hindsight and really see what was going on. Of course, when I was living it, I didn't really realize what was happening. But I've always been that kind of a seeker, in the sense that I was always looking to live a better life. I thought for a long time that the reason that maybe I didn't feel like I had the balance word, right, the good balance between work and home life, was because I didn't have proper systems in place, and I tried different things. I was looking, I wasn't super happy with the balance between my work and home. And the problem I really have is that when I'm all in on my job, I'm all in. So I prioritize my job. And so a couple things happened. I was approaching 40, and I think something happens when you approach 40. We start having this home of life reevaluation, right?
Just and like, metabolism.
What am I doing?
And your metabolism reevaluates
itself
as well. Yeah,
everything's reevaluating. Yeah, exactly. It's really looking at like all aspects of my life. You know, is this even what I want to do? You know, it's what I wanted to do when I was 25, when I decided to do it. But do I still even want to do this? And I wasn't always super happy with how things were in my jobs. I thought about maybe switching jobs or, you know, finding a different place to work. But it really didn't feel really right to me. And so one night I was actually having a hard time sleeping, which is unusual for me, because I was just really kind of this whole ball of just kind of negative emotion about, you know, I don't want to necessarily do this forever. And so I started sort of coaching myself. Okay, well then, okay, we call this math versus drama. I didn't even know that then, but I still was doing it. You know, let's just take the drama away. What are your options here? Lay them all out on the table so you can see. So I laid out all the options to stay within the medical field and still work as a practicing pediatrician. And then I somehow just had this thought of like, or you could retire early. And in my head, I was like, I could.
Oh my God, the aha moment.
You know?
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, it's not a sick parent. It's not it's
right.
A job.
Yeah.
I can change it. I can
like,
leave it. Oh
my
God.
I want. Right, exactly. And so so that night I got myself to sleep by deciding that I would work another 10 years. And then so I'm like 20 year career. That's very respectable. That would be great. And it's funny because that 20 years became 6 months over the course of about a week.
So. Yeah, exactly. And my personal experience with my own story and working with so many women who have made major shifts in their life like that, it's like once you get that aha and you basically the aha translates into a hell yes, then there's really no stopping you.
Exactly. And I just thought I need to do something different. I never thought I would be an entrepreneur ever in my life. And so I've learned so much about doing this, but I just love doing it. I mean, you know, I feel like if you would do it for free, it's probably a good fit, and I would do this for free.
Oh my gosh, yes. Well, that's always a good barometer.
I do like getting paid too, but.
Yes, and don't we all? So, yes, that when the fun stops, it's good that you are getting paid. And then fun doesn't always stop
exactly.
All the time, but every now and then. I would like to circle back to a couple of the things that you said about the emotional eating and the pattern and like your brain getting those dopamine hits. And I've understood that basically like what has been explained to me, however, is like that your brain doesn't really know the difference between good stress and bad stress. It's just for the brain, it's stress. So when I think I'm like you, so when I think about emotional eating, and so what I like to call it for myself is feed your feelings, like
eating your feelings, sure. Yep.
I always make up t-shirts. One day I'm going to
t-shirts
have them made
and
up.
Bumper stickers.
Yeah, so this one, today's is don't feed your feelings, but but I have, and you know, and so I went through a particularly stressful time in my life that, I mean, a lot of different times in my life, but the most recent, which gratefully was a few years ago, was a 6 month window of time where I was like more stressed out emotionally and physically from a negative reason than I probably may have ever been in a really super long time. Well, then, so that 6 months went consecutively as like, you know, that, well, you remember I was referring to the breakup and the ice cream. Well, that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then right continuously after that, I had an amazing, probably one of the best 6 months of my life. So this 12-month window of time was a sustainable level of stress that my brain didn't know whether it was good or it was bad. And so I went from super skinny, like I always like to call it trauma trim. And then I went to, I won't say the F word, but I went to plump and happy. And this pendulum literally swung in a very dramatic way, more so than I had ever experienced in my previous years. And so that's what I got really tuned into, that there are all these emotions and beliefs and things tied up in what you weigh and why you weigh what you weigh and how your weight's affected by different life experiences. And so I wanted to know if you could just, I don't know if you want to speak directly to my 12 months of positive, negative stress, but just in general, some of your oversights on, or not oversights, it was my oversight, but your insights on how that affects people.
Sure. You know, when we're going through negative emotional trauma, people respond in different ways, right? Somebody can go through a very, very difficult negative time in their lives and gain 50 pounds, and someone else drops 50 pounds. People do respond differently. The stress hormones can make it difficult for us to lose weight for some of us, especially for somebody who maybe has like a chronically stressful job, so they're not necessarily going through something that's, you know, particularly devastating. But think of just like an attorney or somebody who has, you know, just day in and day out constant stress and wonders why they can't lose weight.
Having that cortisol,
which is so your adrenal glands, your adrenal glands on top of your kidneys secrete cortisol, which is part of the stress hormone response. And when that's elevated, you know, basically all the time or most of the time, it can make it very hard because the body is thinking like something bad's going to happen here. Like there might be a famine around the corner. And so losing weight is probably not a great idea right now. And that's really like the body is thinking like, hey, no, I don't know. I'm a little nervous. There's a lot of stress going on here. And the body can't tell what it's about, right? So we're having all this emotional stress, but our body is reacting from a survivalistic standpoint. It's going like, you know, I don't really know. This sounds this sounds like something bad really might happen here. And so for you, I'm assuming for the first 6 months where things were really difficult that you probably weren't eating very much. Is that true?
Well, you know, it's interesting that how you put it into perspective, it gives me another thought in the way to answer that. So in my life, when I've been under the stressful work situations and the things that you're talking about that are just like what I would consider, unfortunately, in a window of time in my life, multiple times where I've just functioned at a really high level of stress, I've highly functioned at a high function of stress, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And so So I had a tendency, I would be like an eater during those times, but it's like for me, I can be a feed your feelings until it goes to this certain extreme. And it's almost like once it crosses over this tipping point, then then it's like I back off tremendously and it's like I can't even swallow. So it's...
I think you know, really, really difficult emotions like, you know, deep, deep grief or, you know, like extreme terror. You know, like sometimes we feel very terrified, even if nobody is necessarily like actually threatening us at that moment.
Right.
Or it might be the fear of the threat, you know, of this actual possible physical threat. Those are times, those are, you know, very, very intense negative emotions that we feel. And oftentimes the body is like, hey, we might need to run away to survive. So probably food's not a great idea right now. You know, it's kind of like, oh, I don't know right now. Like, I don't know if I need a full belly and need to digest. I think I need to be like hyper aware and ready to run. Or or with grief, you know, that you get that lump in your throat and that just, you know, you have no energy. And you know, a lot of times food doesn't make you feel better for that. But then when you were talking about things being better and how you gain then, what's interesting there is that's probably much more related to just the habits that you have and sort of beliefs, because beliefs are really just thoughts that you've thought so many times that you believe them. So we often think that when things are good, like say we're in a new relationship or things are going really, really well, then we should celebrate. And then we have beliefs that the way you celebrate is you go out to eat, you have some nice meals, you have dessert because it's celebratory. You know, you're like, I'm just thinking, you know, even when I first met my husband, we would go out to eat and, you know, I was eating out way more often than I ordinarily would and ended up gaining some weight with that because it was a good emotion. It was a nice way for us to interact. And it was basically entertainment through food as well.
I was going to say, you bring up your husband and I feel like there's a difference with the male-female factor because it seems to me that the males who are overweight are more accepting of it and females are more sensitive to it, more aware of it. What kind of experience do you have with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's just from almost day one of when women are born, you know, when we're little girls. We yep. just are getting messages from the media about how people should look. You know, I mean, this is like so within our society about this, that, you know, if you're thin, you're good. If you're not, you're bad. And, you know, just seeing different sizes, maybe seeing the women in our lives as we grow up, trying to diet, trying to lose weight, making comments about how they look in a swimsuit or how they look in certain clothing, or that they've had to buy bigger clothes and, oh, I need to get back on my eating plan, things like that. So we just grow up with this framework that's completely different than what the boys grow up with. But what's very interesting is, so my husband is not an overweight person, but when I started going through my whole process, he just kind of by default and by osmosis started picking up on some things, and he ended up actually losing 25 pounds, which we did not even think he needed to lose.
Wow.
It was
wow.
really fascinating. Because he started looking at, you know, he said to me, he goes, you know what? Everybody emotionally eats. And I said, really? You think so? Because I really didn't think he did. But so he's a physician as well. And he was noticing how he would finish up a busy clinic and he would grab a couple handfuls of nuts or a couple handfuls of those, you know, those really good pretzels that are peanut butter filled.
Yeah,
you know,
ooh,
kind of like a reward for himself, right? Those are so good, right? So he like a little reward for himself, like, oh, you made it through clinic here. Now you can have this little food.
So no Dove bars for him?
Yeah. You know, that's a good question. He probably, when he was on call, he probably was not eating Dove bars like I was.
So he's a salty guy. You're a sweet girl.
Right.
I'm a salty sweet. That's my big issue. It's just like one big circle.
Yeah.
Salty sweet.
Like a lot of that, yeah.
We talked a lot about stressors being a trigger for mm-hmm. emotional eating, but in a lot of the reading that I've done, it's not always just about the stress. And you brought into the childhood component when it's around the females, but one of the things that, like, I've read that, you know, negative beliefs are like icebergs. Like, you can see the tip of them or maybe feel the tip of them, but they really are just like a huge mammoth underneath, and that our subconscious mind has a huge effect on, like, if you're a perfectionist, or if you feel like you're a failure, or the even worse, if you feel like that you should be punished. I mean, they're all like mm-hmm. these psychological factors that go into eating or not eating or gaining or not gaining. And I wondered if you could just touch on that just a little bit. Then let us have some insight on that.
All right, Katrina, hold that thought because we're going to take a quick break. And also, when we come back, you're going to answer that. And I'm extremely curious as to what Tracy's takeaway is with today's show. So we're going to get some insight right after this.
Is the only thing keeping you from launching your podcast not knowing how? Let our award-winning team of veteran broadcasters relieve the overwhelm of launching, managing, and growing your show. You create the content and let the experts take the stress out of the rest. Contact us at produceyourpodcast.com for a free 15-minute consultation. Produceyourpodcast.com.
Take your business personally. Journey to there.
Okay, we're back, and we're very honored to have on the show with us Katrina Ubel, MD, certified life and weight loss coach. And Tracy, before we took a break, you had an interesting question.
Well, I did, because I wanted to take a little bit more of a deeper dive, if you will, on these beliefs around food and weight and, get, you know, going past the stressors into more of like the deeper emotional things that are factors. So how about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So you were talking about the negative emotions being kind of like icebergs, like we can sort of easily access the tip and then there's so much more beneath it. And I find that to absolutely be the case for most of us. Most of us are really living on a very surface level kind of existence, meaning the thoughts that we're really aware of are really just like maybe not even that bad, or like, oh, I made that mistake, or oh, I shouldn't have eaten that, or I wonder what new diet I should join, or, you know, to sign up for, or things like that.
The should, exactly,
right? So a big part of what I teach my clients is to learn how to become aware of what's going on in your brain, not just the thoughts that are super obvious to you, because research shows that we have about 40,000 to 60,000 thoughts every single day. So imagine that you are not aware of 40 to 60,000 thoughts on your, you know, if you're just kind of going about your life living. So what I teach my clients is to take on what's called the watcher or the observer role, which means that that you can basically think about yourself thinking. This is only humans can do this. This is called metacognition, where we can actually take on this different role and pay attention to what our brains are just coming up with. So I'm going to give you just like a very, you know, kind of a not very emotionally charged example of this. it's, but, you know, even for me, and you had mentioned like, oh, this, you know, we're always managing this forever. That's where I'm at. I still notice the connection that when I'm very tired, my brain wants to suggest food. So this happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I was really tired, wanted to get a couple things done before I went to bed. And I was walking through my kitchen and I happened to just see a couple bananas sitting on the counter. And my brain goes, you could eat those. Like, that is, like, right? Just this little, like, that would be a good idea, right? Just this little, like, very innocent little thought, right? Like, you could eat those. And we're not talking about ice cream. We're not talking about cookies or chips or anything, right? They're bananas, right? Like, are bananas bad? But this is the thing, right? I was not physically hungry. I did not need food. What I needed was sleep. But that pattern is still there in my brain, that when I'm really tired, that my brain wants to suggest that food. So that's what's going on deeper, right? Like, noticing, hey, my brain is suggesting food. That doesn't mean I have to actually act on that. You know, then I can start asking myself, so why do you think why is my brain suggesting that? Why do I think food's the right solution right now? And then we can go into deeper into that. Like, why is that? Well, because that's what I've done in the past. Okay. So, you know, so what do you want to do with that? You know, now we have this information. Maybe we need to look at it in a different way. Every time I'm tired and my brain suggests food, I need to be aware of what's going on for myself and decide, actually, that's not what I need to do. I need to tune in to figure out what my body and brain really, really needs and then do that. You know, it thinks it's being helpful, right? It's like, it's just this little suggestion. Like, you could just eat a banana. It's not anything bad.
So how do you deal with that when you're looking at, and there may not be a quick answer to this, but maybe a snapshot, when you're dealing with issues that are imprinted from childhood, like perhaps maybe you had you were raised in a situation where you had like a super skinny mom and you weren't, you're genetically just not built that way. Like, how do you get past that imprint?
Yeah, that's basically what my story was. I mean, my mom and I, you know, you would never think that we were genetically related. Like, she just didn't have to think about food till she was 45 every day in her life, you know? And so really what I have found the most helpful for me, and I find in my clients too, is that we all have these patterns kind of what we do, like the way we automatically think, the way we believe, and we can start seeing that coming up again. So for instance, I'll give you some examples of mine. So I get into scarcity mentality really pretty easily. And I never grew up with food actually being scarce. Okay. Like, I never went hungry. It was never a problem, but I still had sort of some beliefs. Like, for instance, when we were on vacation, my mom would always encourage us to eat a big breakfast, and she would just, I mean, it was really a joke, but as a kid, I took it as serious. She would say, well, you know, we just don't know when we're going to get our next meal. Now, of course, we were going to eat again, right? You know, but she just kind of was jokingly saying, like, oh, we don't know where we're going to eat lunch. We're going to be out and about on vacation, whatever. I took that as, I better stuff myself, because I don't know when we're going to eat again. And if I'm really hungry, there might not be something to eat. And so that became this pattern that I repeated. I mean, well into adulthood, I still have to watch myself on it when I go on vacation and be really careful about watching myself wanting to repeat that again. So these are these deep-seated beliefs. But once you're onto it, it's like you can anticipate it, right? And so I go into vacation going, okay, I know, especially in the morning, I'm going to want to overeat. So let's just really pay attention, be really deliberate, make a plan ahead of time, know that there is food. Food everywhere. That's what's the irony of this, right? There's food everywhere you go. And that you don't need to overeat. You're not going to go hungry. You know, so that's something that I notice as a trend for myself that goes all the way from childhood. Another one for myself that leads to kind of like the self-pity thing is, I think, you know, for most of us, we either have negative emotions toward ourselves. So if something isn't going well, we beat ourselves up and we tell ourselves how we're so stupid and we don't do anything right and that kind of thing. Or we go into victim mode and we blame everybody else, that, you know, we don't have the problem. Everybody else is doing everything wrong. I'm the second person. So, like, if, you know, if one of my kids is misbehaving, I make it about them. Like, they're the ones who need to change. Another person might look at it like, I'm such a horrible parent. Look what I've done that it would create a child like this. So this is a pattern that I do with everything. Like, if any, I see all the time, well, yep, I'm on to you. That's just you and your victim mentality. And when you do enough work through this, and you're aware of your thoughts, you can start to realize, oh, that's just that pattern. That's just how my brain likes to think. That doesn't mean I have to think that way. It's just the way that it efficiently likes to think. I can also choose a different way that serves me.
I love it. So, Russ, here's the thing.
Yeah,
I need to do a takeaway because these are amazing. I think I'm just going to say, hey, my takeaway is you need to hire Katrina.
Tracy's going to take away the whole show. The whole show, that's her takeaway, and she's sticking to it. And now, I want to get the website out there for those of you. And tell me if I'm correct here. It's KatrinaUbellMD.com, correct?
That's correct.
All right, yeah. And it's Katrina with a K, and Ubell is U-B-E-L-L, and then MD.com. Katrina Ubell, MD.com. This episode is not sponsored by Dove Chocolate, but I have a suspicion that sales will be up after...
or maybe down, actually. I think they're going to get down. Sorry,
down.
Dove.
Who knows?
Listen, I can tell you I'm going to go eat one. along with Tracy
right,
DeForge.
Because you can.
I'm Russ Reba. Keep the comments coming. It is a specific episode that you have a comment on. Please comment. And we would love to hear your comments on this show, because this show was an amazing show. Keep listening. We're on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, Empower Radio. And we look forward to hanging out with you at the intersection between personal and business growth on the next episode of the Journey to Their Radio Show.
We hope you've enjoyed today's journey, and we invite you to visit JourneyToThere.com to download full episodes, find show notes, and connect with us by signing up for our newsletter. We want to hear from you. Give us feedback or ask any questions by clicking or tapping Contact Us. That's JourneyToThere.com.